kind of finishing up, we need to pick off Charisse here so we can stay on schedule. So we have three fairly shorter presentations here.
All right, good afternoon, everyone. How'd you enjoy the lunch?
Very nice.
Awesome. So it's my pleasure to provide some residence hall updates today. So the residence hall has truly been beneficial to our students and our college community. Being able to give them that access of affordable housing has been very important. It's been very successful at full capacity ever since we opened. And these students are doing really well. They have close access to college resources. And so you can see from their GPAs, you know, they're all above 3.0. They're all excelling because they can walk to the writing center, the academic support center, the library, get tutoring. They have all the access. And the majority are from Florida, right? But we do have some out of state, out of the country, really, students. So it's a very diverse population. They come from everywhere. And we're happy to have them.
You see that their GPA performance is higher than the general population.
Yeah, most definitely. So on to the applications. So you can see based on our year-to-date data, year over year, we're continuing to have just really a robust request for housing. We only have 256 beds, but every year we have just a tremendous response of people applying to get into the building. And we only have one building. So as you know, we're actively fundraising to get a second building. It would really help us, help our students to continue providing that access to affordable housing and to be successful on campus by being close to all of the resources, all the support that they need to be successful, to retain, to graduate, and to move on and be a success in the community.
A little perspective on this slide is, you can see how we have 811 apps compared to 597 date-to-date comparison. So we're up significantly. And because of the retention, we only had, 25 beds available?
Yes.
So with 800, it'll be over 1,000 applications. We can only make 25 offers. Maybe 30 with some melt at the end of the end of the year.
And what's the priority?
So the students that live there currently, they get first dibs. So they get to return, and the majority of them do return. So as he was saying, by the time we let them back in, there's only about 20 or 30 beds for freshmen that are new that want to live on campus.
And they get selected by, it's by application date.
Yeah, first come, first serve, first come. To keep it fair.
Yeah.
So, first come, first serve, and then we kind of have a wait list. And then if somebody cancels or can't for some reason, then we move on to the next person. We try to get through, but we never make it very far down the wait list because we only have 256 beds that we fill up.
So you don't prioritize like international students or?
No, we don't. So we make sure that they have fun, right? They make lifelong friends, they feel connected, they have support, they're building that community and establishing that sense of belonging here on campus and with their peers. So there's a lot of engagement opportunities, social workshops and stuff like that to make sure that we stay connected to our students and help them be successful. So looking forward, like I mentioned earlier, we've been at full capacity every year since we've opened. So for the past 3 years, we are full. And then we also work on trying to have a very robust summer occupancy plan. And so this year, we have some returning companies, and we also have some newcomers that we're excited to welcome to campus. So we have Brown & Brown that's returning. Those are interns. We have Brunswick Corporation also sending us interns, and then Volusia County Sheriff Office. For the first time ever, we're going to have them on campus. We're excited about that. We're expecting about 16 of those. So we're happy to have them on board. And then we have several athletic camps. Some of them are ours through our athletic department, and some of them are other corporations, other companies. And so we've got, for our internal athletes, we have volleyball and soccer. There's about 40 kids in each camp for that one. And then for the external camps, we have Apex, who plan to do two camps this year of about 40 kids each, as well as the UCF soccer camp. That one is new. We're going to have about 30-ish of those kids. And then we have TRIO, Talent Search, Upward Bound. They're returning from last year. And then we have the music camp, Echoing Air. They're also returning from last year as well. So we're happy to have them back on campus for the summer. We strive to reach that 20% occupancy for the performer. So we do our best to keep the residence hall full and have that occupancy. We also have students here for summer, taking summer school, staying in housing, so we'll have them as well. And then sometimes we have our athletes taking preseason classes, basketball, men and women's. They tend to be here as well over the summer. So the residence hall will have a busy summer, and we welcome that, and we're looking forward to it. So that's all I have, unless we have any questions.
So there's an empty room in the summer, a student that's taking summer classes can move in just for the summer?
Kitchen.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. That's Kristen.
Up next we have Kristen, and here she comes.
Kristen needs another residence hall.
Yes, we do. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I guess I'll stand here. So I'm just going to give you a brief foundation update. I know we're crunched for a little bit of time. So this year, we had a really good year in the foundation. We raised almost just shy of $5.3 million. We also gave out $1.3 million in scholarships and programs in 2024. We raised roughly $210,000 with the Cork and Fork in the gala. A little short on the gala this year, but we had a hurricane, so that was, you know, it kind of dampened our. But as I look at that number, and we raised so much money by donations, but those events are two really great events, really great community engagement events. So we get a lot of gifts from that afterwards too. So it kind of doesn't really speak to the amount of money that we raise. A big part of that was our donation from Halifax, $1.5 million that we received in 2024. $500,000 of it went towards a scholarship for nursing in 24, and $1 million this year is going towards the 2025 Line Grant. $450,000 from Advent Health. So this Line Grant basically funded scholarships, funded programs, a lot of equipment for the nursing faculty. We created a new simulation faculty position with the endowment portion because we received 100% match from the state. So again, to the expansion of the nursing, that's kind of really when we wrote it with Dr. Labasso and we were looking at the grant, that was kind of the push for more seats. We also received a $1.6 million from estate from Dana Rodman, one of our Dennis Shelley, one of our board members, is her lawyer. So it came through and it was unrestricted. So we were able to put it into the residence hall fund. She just wanted us to use it for what we needed it for. So we just added this little chart on here. We recently had a foundation meeting. And, you know, we've had people, Bobby and I've been on our board for a long time, and they're really excited about our endowments now. So Tom and I were looking at this, and I said, I'll pull it from 2015. So this just kind of just tells a story of what we had in 2015, 10 years ago, basically, when you started, I think,
yep.
To where we're at now. So $47 million. I think last year we were about $40 million. Now there was a good market this year, so we have... But we've had a couple of really good, consistent years, and a lot of that has to do with the nursing line grants, but some other big gifts too that we've received. So this is just a breakdown. We had this last year. It's just a breakdown of kind of like where our donations come from. Alumni is we keep on focusing on alumni. We're getting closer. More and more graduates are 4-year graduates, so they act like they're Daytona State alumni, but we're trying to get the AAs and the AS to let them know you're still alumni. We're doing some events, but basically this breaks it down. So 2024, our unique donors, so that's just one donor, 246, which last year I think we were about 180, maybe 170, so we're up. The number of gifts and then the dollar amount. And then individuals, 12-15, we were definitely up in the individual category. And a lot of that is, you know, the community engagement that you guys see me at all the time, or our team's at all the time. We're just out there trying to let everybody know about all of these wonderful programs that we have and everything that I learned from all of them today too. And then the business incorporations. obviously a big portion of that is the Lyme grant, and a couple other big gifts. We also had I think the part of the Patel money was in there, and then, but I like to see the individual gifts at that amount too. So basically we're just shy of 500. I just put the thermometer out there because we are double than what we were last year. So that's just been the biggest, you know, the residence hall too. I mean, it's awesome. We get these donations for programs. We need them. We need them for scholarships. But Dr. Lovasso and I are trying to just think of different unique ways. There's only a few people really that can probably give us the big gift. So we're putting together presentations for a select group of people, but we're also starting to just get out there and get smaller donations. So we're starting a wall in the residence hall that's similar to the chamber wall, where businesses or anybody could, you know, like 5,000, 3,000, 1,000, just trying to chip away at it. We have several employees that give their employee giving to the residence hall. We're up to like 10 or 11 now, which that's, you know, $500. But so we're roughly, I think, what, 4.6 right now. And we have maybe 11, or is 15, yeah?
Yeah.
So we've got a ways to go. So hopefully, we'll send you all we're putting together the marketing piece for the wall. But we thought, you know, there are so many students and parents coming through the res hall too, that I'm sure we could get hopefully some of them to donate as well. This is just a little update of what we've been doing. We have a new alumni director. She's doing great. She actually worked at Flagler for a little bit, Flagler College, and then Stetson. So we have a soccer alumni game, and they're going to play the national championship team on Saturday. Alumni are coming in to play with them, and then we're going to do a barbecue and everything afterwards. So these are just a couple pictures from the alumni. We did a good alumni social for homecoming. You know, just food, drinks, just try to get them engaged in what's going on over homecoming, get some community people involved as well. We're actively planning, I think we have a nursing, she's kind of segmenting into groups, so we have we're working on hopefully a digital media at one point. We just got a lot of different groups that she's trying to get together and just raise the alumni giving too. So our initiatives, I think you all know about the art festival last year. This year was our second year doing it, and it's amazing. Of course, the weather was drop dead gorgeous again too, but we partnered with One Daytona, and we showcased culinary programs. Costa got up on stage and cooked in front of everybody. Our jazz ensemble got up on stage and performed. The Kids Zone was our cosmetology students doing fairy hair and painting nails. We had art in the Kids Zone from all of our students, as well as Volusia County school students. We had science projects where education, they were having them do some sort of photo synthesis something, they put it outside. It was really, really awesome. So we had athletes out there selling water. It was just a great Daytona State showcase. And we got a donation from it too, which is important. So these are just a few pictures of Trent did the pottery wheel. So Trent was over. It's just, it was a great weekend. This is 8,000. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think they're looking at, I think we're going to get a little more this year from it. I didn't want to say it until we actually get it though. So this, all of our initiatives, whether it's Rotary we're part of and we're getting scholarships through that. I mean, Kiwanis, of course, Songwriter Festival, that's every year. And we actually did one at the college this year too, in 2025. I didn't put it up there, but just a way just to get different people on campus. Because as we were talking over here, Alicia, she's like, my dad, this campus is amazing. And I said, as soon as we get a donor or any community person out here, they're amazed at what but we have to get them out here and tell them about it. The middle picture is Volusia County Women Who Care, which is just a group that Dr. Locklear and I are part of, but we're now hosting it at the college. And when I say there's 160 community women and supporters of Daytona State in one area, it's awesome for our college. But it also gives that they give back quarterly to a nonprofit. And this time it was, I think we raised like $36,000 in 1 hour. So it's just it's just good to have them on campus. That's just what Davenport, check. Oops, accreditation. So basically that's just what, you know, we're out there just trying to engage everybody in Daytona State, raise the money for it, and expand the nursing program. and get residence hall money. that's a topic everybody says. Everybody looks at me, residence hall, we need another one.
we have some plans for a couple meetings, hopefully in the next month or so. But, I think we a couple that we'll approach for the 11 million that we need. And then with the plan of maybe if we don't get the whole thing, we'll double back and break it up into smaller chunks. If it's a 5-story building, about 3 million each floor, so we can, we'll show some renderings and try to get each floor sold. And even the first residence hall is open for a naming right as well, still. And then the art wall we're doing is going to be nice, but hopefully we'll get some awareness in there. So.
Yeah, that's good traction. Yep. Any questions?
I mean, like the other state colleges that are similar in size to us, I assume they all have foundations. And like how Irondale compares to theirs? Or in the college emergency center, we get a ton of data on comparing. How do we do, and what's our size, what are we doing? I'm just curious.
Question. I don't think I've ever seen a report.
I haven't seen a report of earnings, but we're on a monthly report where, like, we would talk about the big gift we got from the hospital. But I'll look into that, though. We do work with several of them that are interested in what we've done with the residence hall and how they can work. I've never really seen actual numbers, but that's something I definitely should look into, yeah.
I remember seeing and I thought, wow, that's a pretty good number, was the College of Central Florida, probably saw this number 5 years ago, had their endowment was like $87 million, but it included a museum. It was in that number. Because the foundation owned a museum. It was one of those legislative, it was going bankrupt, and they said let the college have it and run it. So it's inflated. That's it. And when I called, I talked to the president. I said, "You have it's a little school. We have I know you have a lot of horse money there, but my goodness, he's in Ocala there." And he said, "No, he goes. I can't remember how much the building goes, but our building is in that number."
Yeah.
And I go, my gut tells me we're pretty. I think we're pretty good, because a lot of us were very reactive as a community colleges. We didn't get into the development game from the onset. And then we've, I think, done some things, like when I became president, we didn't have an alumni office. So I created that to start cultivating alumni, and you see we're chipping away at it. There's got to be a report out there that we can.
I think I've seen some of their endowments, but I would be interested in some of their big gifts too, where they.
You guys do a great job. My comment isn't, hey.
Oh no, I think it's great.
I always like seeing what other people.
Yeah, I'm interested what the sister school's endowments are. Yeah.
I'm sorry.
No, I'd be interested to see if there are some that don't have any foundation at all.
At all.
Mm-hmm. And I think again with the museum and whatever that goes in the endowment, that's. Not much you can do with your foundation when you have that loaded in there.
Yeah.
So, I'll bet you we would rank pretty highly.
And can you track on the alumni side? I know this is hard to track, where people go to work. Just because I know if you were talking to a company, and if you can say.
Yes. So we've really, the past couple of years, our database was all in one. So now we've worked hard the past few years to segment all the alumni in a different database. And then also we worked with one company that did a LinkedIn search to find out where they work. And that's actually, we were just putting together a scholarship and the girls in our office just pulled, I was like, tell me what alumni work at NASCAR, because we have to start, so we're chipping away at it. The database is, it's tough because a lot of the donors are alumni, but they weren't coded as alumni. So we're kind of just trying to, back in the day before there was really good data entry. So now we're just making sure when they come in, we're coding them in a proper way. And then we want to bring them back for a nursing, alumni, or for sports, we're trying to plan, which hopefully a nice reunion over at News Journal Center. next year. I haven't told you about it yet, but it would get my curve back there possibly because it's in the works of it. But we've got so many great programs going on, and we want them all to come back and see like where it started 15 years ago. So we're plugging away at that. Okay, thank you.
All right.
Alicia. One more comment on the foundation. So yes. I know I bring this up occasionally, but obviously the Browns are one of those that could do something. I continue to think we need to think of creative ways to partner with them at the ESCOL. So we've got the buildings, they've got the park. There has to be a way to partner. Whether it's, if we could convince a big name musician to come and have an event that we charge tickets for and they donate the music. I don't know what it is, but I feel like if we partnered with the Esplanade, it would only strengthen the relationship.
So I went to the Blue and Gold Gala recently and was talking to Cece for a little bit, and in my mind I'm just thinking, because they're very obviously very supportive of Every Riddle, but we do need to find a niche to get them. They're supportive of Daytona State too, but for that big gift,
They put a lot into Esplanade. It's amazing.
Yeah,
it's a game changer for the community. But we've got the building there, and so somehow there's got to be a partnership that is a win-win for, because you could do an inside-outside thing. There's a concert on the lawn and a nice event on the inside. Mm-hmm. We could find the right. Too bad Florida Georgia Line isn't still together.
But I tell you, we have a couple of the students that have come through the Mike Curb, that's what we were kind of talking about. And one of them opens up for Joan Jett. So we've got some students that are out there starting to make a name for themselves. So I think as that program goes on, we might have an opportunity to have another, you need a big name.
Yeah.
But we are working on that part.
Great. All right. Last but not least, accreditation.
Thank you. All right, everyone. I'm Alicia Alexander. I'm the Dean of Institutional Effectiveness and Compliance. And I'm going to do my best to keep you guys as engaged as possible with giving an overview of the ever so exciting accreditation of DSC. All right. So currently, our current status, in terms of our accreditation status, we're in good standing with SAC-COC, that's the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, with Commission on Colleges. I don't know why it's so long. some of you were here when we went through the reaffirmation process and the on-site visit in 2023. We received our official letter this past summer. And so we are clear for the next 10 years. So this accreditation is good until 2034. In that, it's good to note, or I would like to note, that we received no recommendations, which is very rare, because I'm great. No. No, because we're great. We're great. And it's definitely a rare outcome, and it's just a testament to the quality of our programs and our adherence to policies and procedures. So in that regard, we're sort of kind of, an example for everybody in the system. So what's next on the horizon is we are changing accreditors. Yes, because it's
very fun.
We're
going to do it again.
Why wouldn't you? I know, party. No, in 2022, the Florida legislature passed a law requiring all of the Florida public institutions to change accreditors either after their fifth year review or their reaffirmation. So we just passed our reaffirmation, and now we get to start on seeking a new institutional accreditor. And along with that, we provide quarterly reports on our progress to the Department of Education. So, where are we going? well, there was a concerted effort by the Florida Department of Education, the chancellors in both the Florida college system, state university system, and of course a lot of staff at the institutional levels who gave reviews, analysis, and ultimately we got a consensus on an accreditor. There were three that made the cut, but looking at time and money, Higher Learning Commission was the ideal agency for the majority of the institutions. So you will hear about pretty much all the universities, all the four colleges, starting their application process or the long process of changing to HLC. So the Higher Learning Commission is basically headquartered or located in the central region. We just attended a conference there in Chicago, so they've had it there a couple of years. They span over 21 states in that region, and it's about over 1,000 institutions, and probably gonna get about, 40 more over the next 5 years, probably. They've been around for almost 130 years, the same amount of time as SAC-COC. They have a very prioritized focus on mission-centered governance. So their philosophy is we have these standards that we want you to comply with, but it needs to be through the lens of your mission. And so that allows institutions some freedom and some flexibility to demonstrate compliance in their own individual and unique way. That makes it a lot easier for us, having just gone through reaffirmation with a process that's a little bit more tight. We are already conditioned to do all the things. So we are not concerned about doing taking care of those steps. Many of the Florida colleges, as well as the Florida Department of Education, have been in contact with the Higher Learning Commission. So they know we're coming. We've made some friends. We are able to kind of anticipate and kind of get prepared for what the whole process entails. And in doing that, HLC has been very collegial and accommodating, so much so that they've created this accelerated process for initial accreditation. I know it says 18 months, but yeah.
That's accelerated.
And basically what it does is it eliminates the period of candidacy. So a lot of times when you get accredited, you get provisional accreditation in the beginning, and then it's like, you know, an engagement, and then a couple of years they say, okay, you're fully accredited, and now you're on the regular 10-year review wheel like everyone else. So for us, with them knowing that we're coming, and a lot of us are already just going through any reaffirmation and are already fully accredited, they're giving us this kind of shortcut. So we anticipate we'll be able to take care of it in less than 2 years. All right, so there's a lot of levels of review and approval, but we've done a couple of things already. So the first is that, of course, we received approval from you all to change, because that's important. And then our next step was to apply or submit a request to the U.S. Department of Education, which is required in order to move on with any of the rest of the steps. And so we were able to get that in record timing, 2 months. There are some institutions that submitted a request a year ago and still haven't heard anything. Submitted at the same time that we did and still haven't heard anything. I think it's because we're great. But I also think it's a matter of just what hands their request falls in and how fast it moves with that particular contact there. So we were lucky and we were able to get our approval right before we went on winter break. So when we came back, we said, okay, this is a little bit sooner than what we anticipated, but that's okay. That means we're well within our timeline, so we'll keep to it. So we had already scheduled to submit our application on April 30th. And ahead of that, we scheduled kind of like a preliminary, I call it a first date meeting virtually with HLC, one of the HLC vice presidents. And we just kind of wanted to introduce ourselves, let them know that we intended to apply, kind of get some information so that we can start off on a good foot. It went well, it was informational, and we got everything we needed to move on to the next step. And so after that, we went to Chicago, myself and our planning and assessment coordinator, and it snowed. Yes, it snow flurried while we were there, so we got a lot of what Chicago had to offer. While we were there, we were able to get more information and come back fully armed to prepare and get the college ready. So Now that we have everything we need, we will submit the application on the 30th, and then that will get the ball officially rolling. So once it starts rolling, we have to kind of go through all of these hurdles, I guess you could say. And I have the dollar sign there because it is a pay-as-you-go type of thing. There are fees associated with this process. What the HLC has done is allowed us to kind of do it as we go and not do one big payment all at once, because the intent of it is that you're going through these levels and you have to get approved and you're demonstrating something, so you don't want to assume that you're going to go through the whole entire process and pay everything up front. But nonetheless, so we'll start at the end of this month, and we expect a month before we hear back, and then this is when this timeline starts. So by spring 27, we anticipate to be fully up under HLC membership. There is an on-site visit that's required. There are a couple of reports that are required that are kind of typical for this process. So we're ready to go. The power of AI is gonna help us crunch that time down and be able to get through this process smoothly. And so I know the big question is, so what is it that is expected of you all as a board members? Of course, the big word is support. We need your support. The main thing is maintaining accreditation with SAC-CLC while we apply. And so in order to do that, we need to do exactly what we're doing right now and not do anything different. But no, as seriously as the board, everything that you all have on your calendar, your schedule, is all compliant with both agencies' requirements. So orientations for onboarding, this retreat, the board meetings themselves, any professional development opportunities that you attend, all of those help us check all the boxes and not have to worry about having any discrepancies between the two agencies. And then the second thing is, as we apply, of course we need time, we need folks' time, we need staff's institutional knowledge, and like I mentioned earlier, we're gonna need some financial resources to pull some of this off. When we get to the part of having an on-site visit, it's a little shorter than SAC-CLC. They were here for about 3 or 4 days. This one is gonna be a day and a half. But they do wanna interview folks. They wanna interview students, faculty, and of course board members, or interview Tom as well. I think last time, was it, did the interview?
Yes,
okay. And how was it?
It went okay, I guess.
They're concerned about the basic things, board autonomy, being able to make decisions best for the college without undue external influence, and just being a part of our internal operations as well. Other than that, we just, again, need support and continue to keep you all updated on the steps as we go through them. And if anything comes up, we'll send the info up to you. So that's all I have. Any questions?
What's that?
How long ago was that? Was that two or three?
2 years ago, maybe, yeah. Three?
It was 2023, so 23. Just under 2 years.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, with the previous administration, we were accredited to 2034.
Yes, the current accreditation that we have is valid through 2034.
My question is, why do we expect this one to do an accreditation on us if we're already accredited to 2034?
Well, because the statute's requiring us to change.
I understand. Right. We're changing to a new one. Do they accept our accreditation to 2034?
No. We have to go through this process.
It's a different.
They need to do their own evaluation.
It's a different agency.
Yeah,
I understand that, but this is an expedited.
I'm just saying we're accredited to 2034.
Yeah,
and they should at least look at that and say, okay, we'll wait for 2034 to come and see if you need accreditation again.
Yeah, but the way the statute was written, we have to pursue it within a timeframe right after your 10th or your 5th year, because Saks had a 5th year. So we happened to just get in, and now we're going to have to do this all over again. It's just the timing of it. It's not their issue. It's the state of Florida's issue that caused us to do this, because most people would voluntarily just change accreditation.
When was that statute?
2022. Yeah. So.
And so it's so there's going to be a bunch of Florida schools that go from being accredited by Saks COC, and all of those schools are going to be looking for.
Yeah, the 28 of us, state schools, and the 10 or 11 state universities are all mandated to go to change.
It sounds like they all,
and they all
mostly
so we all, yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, we all
it just
chose.
Sounds like a bad time to be Saks COC.
Yeah.
I mean, well, don't mess with the government.
Yeah. Well, that was the issue.
Yeah.
So,
and then,
you know, so it's, you know, we're applying to them.
Yeah, I understand that, but I mean, they should say to you, look, we understand, but we'll wait for you until your accreditation is
now. We have to do this.
Yeah, that's not so much
money. We can't wait.
Correct.
We'll be not compliant.
We'll be not compliant if we wait.
That will be absorbed.
No, I'm saying they, the new folks that are going to accredit.
They're not going to just grant us this timeline. They won't.
Yeah, there's a reciprocity agreement. So we have to do it. Exactly.
Yeah.
That's why
money.
I expressed the dollar. Yeah, the dollar signs.
Give me a break.
Yeah.
Somebody needs to be taken in the woodpile.
Well, you would start with our governor. So it's not going to happen.
Not if I want to fight.
Yeah, it's a 10-year. So when we get this accreditation, it'll go to 36.
What
10 years from that.
What do you think the cost all in, let's say?
This one, I predicted around about $23,000 altogether.
Okay.
And that's not good. And that's because
I don't know. Exclusive of your time and staff time.
That's just the actual accreditation
to
apply.
Yeah.
We still have to pay membership dues to Saks COC. We can't be unaccredited.
Right.
So we have to be with them until we're not. It's like an overlap.
Yeah.
Is my lab insurance?
The cost factor that is our time, which
the 10
year that we just did was, that's a 3-year in the making, volumes of things. It's a rigorous process, and I've been through, between my 10 years at the other schools before I came here, like 3 or 4 of them, and never have I had a 0 recommendation experience. I don't think it exists at most colleges. So we kick butt and we've got to turn around and do it again.
Thank you.
We're prepared. We'll do it. It's a lot of staff time and resource.
When you pass that accreditation and you have it, then you can choose to no longer be a part of Saks COC until 2034, right? You can drop that in to like 2027.
Prior to the statute, we could always had the freedom to go seek a different accreditor if we wanted to.
Right.
But I think there's not a college that I know that's ever switched.
We don't have to be a member of two.
We don't have to be a member of two, though. Once this is done,
we'll quit playing.
Yeah, 2027, we're done with
you. We're done with Saks.
And we're no longer paying membership dues or
correct.
Anything like that.
Yeah, we'll just have the
one. It's like 1 or 2 years of overlap.
Yeah.
Correct. Yes.
That's something.
You know what the most fascinating thing is? The president of Saks is stepping down, which was really, that's what
caused the fight.
It's like the gift that keeps on giving. They got sideways and it was like this, okay, you're going to try that? Well, do this and then one up and whatever. And it's like what you've done now for the system and for taxpayers and for the, it's just, it's outrageous. It's outrageous. Serves no purpose.
Yeah. I know presidents that when's our accreditation coming up? I'm going to go look for a college that just got there, so I don't have to go through it again.
Yeah.
Not a bad idea. The one thing about
Yeah.
Well, they have the schedule of all of the colleges and when they're up. So you can see for Nick if you want to.
I'm going to find someone who's going to finish that one out of the manual.
Well, we're glad you're still in.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you.
Hang in there.
Great job leading us. And like I said, we went through with no findings, no recommendations. So I say that to say we're in good shape for this one. And somewhat is it to an advantage because we just did it. We aren't having to recreate a lot. We already have it. It might be asked a little differently. We might have to format it a little differently, but the lift shouldn't be as great, but it's still a lot of work.
Will they acknowledge what we went through? Will they look at what? Okay.
Yes. In fact, us going through that is what is making us eligible for the accelerated process.
Right. Okay.
If we hadn't had that, it would drag this out a lot longer. Yeah. It could be 26 months. Yeah.
Okay. Good luck.
I don't know. Silver lining. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
President's evaluation, as always, Lynn has done a great job summarizing it. You know, you got, I'm sure, have started breezing through it. No surprise, there's a lot of fives. We still fill it out, I guess, because we have to. It's hard to believe, Tom, that somebody can get this many fives, but it's a reflection of the board's confidence in you. Appreciation for all you've done. So I think in the past ones of these, I picked the handful where at least there was one or two fours and said, you know, okay, if there's any area you can look at, maybe this is it, but there's very few of those. So I don't know what else we can say as a board other than a huge thanks. Obviously, we have great confidence in you and in your results. Great document that you put together for us to help us walk through it. So other people want to chime in, but you know the only two, right? That didn't get all five were the very first two there, and they were 4.8 and 4.75. Student success is always at the heart of what we do. So, and COVID kind of threw a wrench in some of the numbers. So, but anyways, great job. Other comments that people want to throw in there?
Yeah, I'd say my explanation for so many fives is. There wasn't a scale to 10. Really, it's, I don't like these forms, and I think we have to do them. It's a dull instrument, but I think it's an affirmation, if you needed it, of what you always hear from us, that you have our support, and you support us, and we feel it, and so, shoot, you know. Keep on keeping on. Great stuff.
Thank you.
Anybody else want to chime in?
Well, I didn't know if we were going down the line.
Yeah, maybe.
Because I think that we're all going to echo a lot of the same thing. But, you know, as an employment lawyer, I always tell people, be really honest in these, like, even if it's hard. And so I'm sitting there and, you know, I mean, I'm reading every one. I'm like, well, there's nothing that's not, you know, it's not the top. So, as always.
Thank you, thank you.
Yeah, I mean, Tom, when I got to the leadership part especially, I was just like, man, the guy just hits the mark on every single one of these things. And also your communication with us, it's always done, one, so professional, but also so proactively. And I think sometimes, because this is the only state college board seat I've ever held, and I don't think anybody else has had any others, you wonder, what are our peers around the state, do they go through the same kind of experience? And my venture to guess is that they don't all go through that same kind of experience. But we're very fortunate to have you in this leadership role. And also, too, what one of the things, too, that I think I commented on in my evaluation was you also are quick to recognize your team members, your key your staff, your employees. You always recognize them, too, as well. And plus, you mix it up with the athletes and all that really well, too. And we're just glad you didn't get into a fight that night at the basketball game. You know, so.
Randy Dye might have been the one guy.
Similar to Kelly, on the HR side, I always tell our employees, like, everyone has opportunity for improvement, and it is a manager's responsibility to help every employee do a little bit better. And then as I was going down and everything was a five, and I was like, I'm not even following my own rules. And I think that, again, I don't think that anybody is perfect, but my gosh, you're as close to perfect as it comes. Thank you for everything you've done. I had told Lynn, I said, you know, I've only been around for a couple of months, so I don't feel like I have that much knowledge. I'm a little concerned. And she said, don't worry about it. You can use don't know on anything that you don't feel like you have the information for. Well, as I was going through it, I felt like I had so much information. And in such a short amount of time, I had seen you deal with what happened with the basketball game. I saw you deal with the student who was deported. I got to see you deal with and talk about what was happening with student financial aid and how important it was to you. And everything we talked about, I was like, my goodness, I do have a lot of information. It's because of you and your excellent communication skills. And I think you're excellent. That's that.
What can I say, Tom?
You know, we've been together a long time.
We've been together since you've been president, and even before.
Yeah.
You know, and I watched, not that you were growing physically, but mentally into the position. And I watched you take the time to visit with your staff and even the people all the way down. You're out there and they see you and they understand what you're looking for, and if there is a need to help, you're going to help them. I mean, overall, you know, I don't think there's another college president that can stand in your shoes. And I just want to let you know, the rest have, but I appreciate what you do for this institution. And, you know, I remember when I took my first command, it was so bad. And the commanding general came and visited me off on an exercise. He said, how's it going? I said, sir, there's a few bumps here and there. He says, okay. He says, just get a strong foot and a big boot, kick ass, take names, and keep going. Because there's nowhere to go but up. And you have brought us to the top. And I know you're going to let us stay there. So. Kudos to you, my friend.
Thank you.
Lloyd was chair when you became president, and I was the newbie. I was in your seat, basically. As you were talking through that.
Yeah, he was the diamond in the rough.
And
I brushed it off.
I mentioned that to him the other day. I said, we didn't know the diamond that we had out there.
Yeah.
And he came in the interim role, and it was like, this guy's not acting like an interim. And you didn't act any different as an interim than you do today. so.
Well, thank you. I want to thank you. It's been a good run. It's been a good run. We've done so many tremendous things. I couldn't do it. You know, I've had, you know, a little health issue last, you know, year, and you guys, you know, supported me, and I really appreciate it. It's been a really good run, and I don't know why I'm emotional, but we've done a lot of things really positive. I've got some feedback from people in the community that are just like, wow, the 20th state is a different place now. It's looked at just a lot differently in the community, and that's something it was a personal thing in a way. Like, I didn't want us to be looked at as that second choice place. You know, why would we want to be the second or the place you go to if you can't, you know? And so I think we've worked, all of us, you all in the team worked hard to be looked at as a place that you want to go to, period. So a lot of blood, sweat, and tears, and it's great to, you know, to see a lot of the fruit, and we've got a couple, you know, other big projects yet ahead, so looking forward to it. So, but thank you for your support. I couldn't do this job without knowing that, you know, that I have the support of the board, and, we just like any other organization, have challenges from time to time, but knowing the support's there, that we'll get through them, and just like the financial aid, just get proactive and get busy and get things straight. So, and again, just all the new programming, all the new degrees that we were bringing forward are just really impactful programs for our community. So thank you. Just want to thank you.
We're going to talk a little bit about our evaluation, and then Tom's going to take a restroom break.
Yes.
You can stay for this part if you want. Yeah. Well, always important to look at us too. So Tom did great, as he always does. Important for us to self, reflect on how we've done. And also really good results. A couple areas that caught my eye. One on the positive side. I remember not too many years ago that first question was lower than a 3.83 for sure. And I think we've really tried hard. We spent a lot of time talking about our mission statement at a prior retreat. A lot of times you'll see one of us try to refer to it in a meeting. It's always on the first slide.
Yeah.
And make sure it's there when we start the meeting. So I'm excited to see that, because it is always good to ground ourselves on what are we supposed to be doing. So that's exciting to see. On the educational monitoring, one section where we just had a few below a 4, but always worth noting. And one of those is really related again. It's the way I interpret that question, kind of to student success. So how well are we doing at the heart of our educational mission? And how can we continue to make continuous improvements? Because as is often the case, sometimes when you think you're at the top of your game is when you take the foot off the gas and you quickly find out, somebody's catching up to you. So important for us to remember that one. And then, the board leadership, the educational opportunities. I think Betty was our champion for improving our educational opportunities. So I have taken note of that. And maybe a workshop even we could add. We could have somebody come do a workshop about, board.
Okay.
Just some important topic that could be important. So maybe you combine those two and have some outside person kind of talk to us about what are some ways that board can be very effective at monitoring educational outcomes and efficacy or something to that nature. So we didn't do bad on any area, but it's always good to pick the ones where at least some of us think we can improve and improve.
Yeah, there are a ton of examples out there where governance has not worked well at this, at the district board of trustees level. They fight. They have different interests that collide. There's a separation with leadership, and that's. You always kind of look over there and go, well, wow, I'm glad we're not them. But, how do we figure out, what are some, maybe it's the chancellor, or maybe it's someone that's seen the good, the bad, and the ugly in the system. It'd be great to have a presentation and just say, here are some of the hallmarks of some of the very best that we've seen, and here's some of the things, the pitfalls that some got into that ended up creating fractures and turnover and disruption that affects student outcomes. You know, it's fine even if you didn't agree, and we have such great unanimity and collegiality here. But if our results weren't good, if our student outcomes weren't good, then what does that matter? And likewise, if you had friction in the board, a little bit of button heads, and you know, hard discussions with leadership, but your student outcomes are exceptional, that's not bad either. You know, it's not necessarily wrong. But I think, you know, it'd be nice to have that perspective, because I don't have it. We have the best of both. Great collegiality, great support here at the board level, great rapport and connection with leadership with a focus on excellence, and look at the student outcomes. Mm-hmm. They reflect all of that. So, you know, maybe we should go on the road. You know, I'm just thinking about that.
You know, that, I was just thinking that, Bob.
Come on. Oh, my goodness. I've sprained my arm. Pat myself on the back. But no, I just think that that's
now,
just.
I think back to the last meeting that we had. And I think that's a great example of it. And frankly, we had a vote really pretty much almost heading right down to just the normal yay, nay, yay, everybody yay. And Randy Dye stopped us for a moment, and he asked a couple of questions about that roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And about the difference in the cost and the metal roof. Well, let's talk about life expectancy and all that. And he made us all, or at least made a few of us, rethink ourselves and our where we were going. And next thing you know, we were going in a different direction.
Yeah.
So it was good.
So we'll look at workshop and I think part of the reason I think things run smoothly too is you know I try to do those one on ones so that you know because everything is sunshine you know in a board meeting that we can have some of those tougher questions and stuff like that hashed out you know in before a board meeting.
Yeah.
So that was just something I adopted. Wasn't how it was done before.
No, it wasn't.
I mean, right? Yeah, and
I used to go to board meetings initially, just kind of feeling like I was not sure what was coming. I mean, I'd read the package, of course, and all those kinds of things. But
yeah,
you know, you see nothing.
It's just something I picked up over being around the table for was a vice president back in 2006, so I started to see the interaction between presidents and board, and I would see some, you know, at board meetings that you can tell like that some topics weren't discussed, and then you know some awkward you know discussions and things like that. And I thought, I mean, I'm all for awkward discussions and tough discussions, but why not do the one-on-one? Maybe you can get clarified, and then you're even more prepared to.
Yeah.
Discuss it at the meeting, per se, and not maybe ask something that would be obvious, from the staff side, right? So, so I think that was just something when I became president, I'm like, I'm gonna, give you guys the time each board member to talk about, you know, different topics and things that you know on the board, and so I think that's been valuable. To help the even our relationship, because if we didn't do that, think about it, I'd be talking to Randy only. And I think, I mean, you know, you're all, you know, he's the chair, but you're all equally, you know, you're all equal in a way in terms of the board responsibility. So I think it's well worth our time to do that.
Well, you know, from a governance standpoint and working with a publicly traded board for decades, you know, we knew one thing that directors hate: surprises. Right.
Yes.
Either by omission or by action. You know, you don't want to be surprised. And so, data, you know, if it's too little, why? Is there something being hidden? Is there something being concealed? And likewise, being bulldozed with, you know, a sheet of paper like this or data that it's going to take me, it's going to take me weeks to go through this in detail. And, you know, also, is there something hidden in there? Are you trying to hide something that's slipped in there that's going to take a ton of analysis? And those were things that it's like you had to be very conscious, you know, when preparing for a board. It's like never surprises. We're well prepared, even for things that aren't on the agenda.
Right. I mean, a lot of times I'm covering stuff that, you know, is you may not even see on the agenda, but it may come up.
I think it's more stuff not on the agenda.
Yeah. Yeah. You may, someone at another event might say something to you. So I'm always thinking, and it's of, you know, respect for you all in your jobs, that as board members, that you know, you know, I'm trying to anticipate what you may hear out there, so let me tell you first before you, you know, and this thing is important, so I try hard at that part. Like, sometimes I may be even telling you something that you might not even, it might not ever come up, but it's something I'm thinking about, so, you know, I like to share it. So,
like an old German general said, loyalty is the marrow of honor. Unless you have loyalty, then it doesn't work.
Yeah. Thank you, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah. And while Tom's walking out, just I do want to echo once again, we do have a great board. So thanks to each of you. I mean, I've been involved in lots of boards, and then you guys all have.
Yeah.
And I do feel like this is a board where it's the combination of the people skills. I mean, it's just people you like being around, which is a huge part of anything. But the expertise on the board in all different areas. It's just, especially as we've, you know, changed over the years. I mean, it's so nice having, as an example, somebody with healthcare, because we do so much in that area.
Yeah.
And the attorneys we have in the crowd, and finance, and just so many different things, accounting, it's been great.
I know I've asked you all at some point a question on how do you handle this at your organization, because, yeah. you know, I've known as much, you know, from y'all as, you know, the other way around, so, you know, it's... But I love the job because my board makes it easier to love. So thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you, Tom. And Bob, you may have come on to a good idea. It could be an income, fee income producer for us. We go on the road.
Absolutely.
Charge a fee.
GSC on the road.
Yeah.
Yes, right. Sure.
Revenue.
So, as always, I'd like to have just a quick conversation, if we can, about Tom's contract and compensation, and then at our next board meeting, the May board meeting, is when we bring his contract forward. So I asked Rodney, who's over here, if we have any questions, to put together some information. Let me just talk you through it real quick. So the first page here, I'm hoping is really accurate because it came from the chancellor of the Florida State College System. So this is the base salary, so it's not going to include any retirement contributions or unique provisions, bonuses, of all of the presidents. If you have a pen, I mentioned this in advance, but time got away from me and Rodney had to bring copies for me, but if you go down the list and if you put a check mark these are in a different order now, they're alphabetized, even better. So Semi, S-E-M-I, Lorenz is the president. Put a check mark by T-A-L-L, Murdaugh. I'll tell you why I'm putting these check marks here in a minute. S-A-N-F, Brody. F-S-W, Albritton. Daytona State, Labasso. And I-N-D-R, Indian River, Moore. The average enrollment at those that we just checked is 10,250. And they're all within, like, the smallest of those is 8,600, the biggest of those is 12,000. So these are the ones that are most like us. We are at 10,244. So we are almost spot on the average of those. So you can quickly compare, you know, the base salaries at least of those, and Tom would be the second highest. The only one that's higher on a base level would be Indian River, which is a little bit larger than us, but not much. And that president has quite a high base. So you go to the second page,
This is where they've tried to go out to actual contracts and pick out some of the other unique elements for some of those that were, you know, closest to us in size. And the ones in yellow are the most recent contracts, so the 24 contracts. The green ones are dated a bit because they are the 23 contracts. Oh, yours didn't get color-coded. The top three are green. The bottom three are yellow. And so the green ones are a year stale. The yellow ones are current. There's a couple of discrepancies, which is interesting. None of them astronomical. The base salaries are more accurate on the first sheet because they came from the system. And some of this information is dated. But on this page, I mainly was looking at the non base salary things. And if you look at kind of the difference between the base and all their other provisions, what I would tell you is, once again, Tom is right about average here. So for all the other ones, the other items in their contract are worth $195,000. For Tom's, his is worth $218,000. So he goes from the 200, or the 350 to the 567 number. And I'm rounding. So I show you all this data just to say that I think we made some changes in the past year or two, where we added another retirement plan, changed the way that was funded for Tom. We added a more generous auto allowance. And if you look at the size of the institution, and if you look at some of the base or the non-base stuff, he's not the highest, he's not the lowest, and he's kind of in the middle. That being said, I think we all agree Tom's not in the middle when it comes to performance.
Right.
So now the question is, what do we want to do? Conversations we've had in the past is, this presumably will be a tough budget year, so I'm not sure what the college will do for pay raises for the rank and file. I'll talk to Tom about that a little bit later. Whatever we give him will be public, so we have to make sure that all of us are comfortable sitting down in front of the newspaper saying, here's why we did it.
Question on the 401A and 457F, the retirement contributions, was that a one-time or is that continual?
That's continual.
That's continual, okay.
And that's all our funding?
Yeah.
All
yes.
Yeah, not his funding.
I think that's good, though.
Yeah. I'd love to hear kind of initial thoughts. I will tell you this, the other big, good bit of news. So you may remember last year I talked to Tom before the meeting and said, hey, would you consider extending your contract if we were to do something that would factor into our decision as kind of what we would do salary-wise. And he was at that point in his life where he said he really wasn't sure if he wanted to extend his contract, that had his medical issue and just some things in his life. So his contract ends in June 30th of 2026. So we have him for a little bit of time. But I talked to him again this year, and he is willing to extend his contract for 1 year. So, and actually, there's a statute that's been introduced. It hasn't been passed yet, right?
It hasn't passed. It's in one of the
Yeah, that would limit contract extensions greatly. But we would be ahead of any statute. So we could extend his contract for a year, which would keep him here through June 30th of 27.
Well, here, we should accept that.
Vote.
Yeah, so that's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
And in recognition of that, I think we should do something for him. I think we need to be sensitive, as always, just to how.
Did he have anywhere he wanted? Did he have a recommendation to you?
I'm careful to ask for something in case we can't deliver it. He's mentioned that a couple of these other presidents that are, so he would agree with all this analysis, that sure, if you look at the schools that are most similar to us, he is second highest in base and in line in the other type things. What he would point out is that some of these presidents are not near as experienced as he is. So they're newer presidents that were bought in. And then one of the ones that isn't on the ones I had you check off, I forget which one it is, but in a smaller institution that's also relatively new, makes a higher salary. So it's a function of when they came in. Sure. Or maybe the cost of living in the local area. Some of these are in, you know, Miami or Orlando or other cities, but.
I just know in the past, Tom has always been apprehensive about taking too much relative to what the rest of the team, the rest of the employees get. You know, he's been cautious about that on some occasions.
Yeah. I think one thing for sure is if you look at, and everybody calls it something different, but if you look at additional compensation, although somebody put a 401A in there, it looks like, or performance incentive, there are a couple that are at 75 and 80.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, the 50K, we've given him an additional comp. There's no statutory limits on that amount. And so to me, that's an easy one to add some to.
What is that for?
Yeah.
It's basically just, it's...
Vehicle.
No. It's just a way to add some compensation. You can't call it...
It's just a bonus.
It's basically a bonus in disguise.
Like it's paid once.
It's guaranteed.
If you look at this contract, it has critical compensation. If you look at the two that paragraph, that says critical compensation shall be...
Yeah. And actually, the next two things you have are his contracts, in case you're interested, just to read through them. It's a one-time payment.
It's a one-time payment each year.
Yeah.
Correct.
Is an opportunity.
And are we, I think we talked about this the last time we did some things with regard to deferred comp and retirement. We made that adjustment, and to me, it's like, what would it be in his best interest at this stage? The compensation's pretty good, particularly considering this area. The additional comp and things that may go into retirement, if we're able to do it, you know, without getting afoul of the state system. But I mean, bluntly, I think this is Tom's last stop. It isn't like he's gonna pick up and go to, you know, we don't wanna assume that, but I think from what he said, this is where he wants to retire. And if that's the goal, and we can get the extension, how do we lump that so that his retirement is maybe more robust and, you know, not make as big adjustment maybe in salary and bonus? I don't know. So
I want to say when we talked about the deferred comp, that's maxed out.
We're running into some statutory.
Looked up the 457F, and I admit I Googled it. But it is not subject to limits, except for it has to be at substantial risk of forfeiture, meaning the employee's rights to compensation are contingent on future performance.
Yeah, and so you may remember...
You got to stay with us through here, but then we'll give you this and your 457, and then it's got the tax relief.
And you may remember we cleaned up another one where he had basically, he was paying the taxes on his retirement contributions while it was still at risk.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they were rolling over the amount that was at risk. So he had, he had finished a contract period, and yet all of that was still at risk. So we've done a lot of clean up and put things in his favor. So we have talked a lot about how he would like to see that structured.
Yeah.
And I feel like, and Rodney chimed in, we've worked with the retirement attorneys to clean up. So I feel pretty comfortable about how his retirement is structured right now. And I think he does too.
Yes. We need to talk to our attorneys, and they cleaned up what was previously
a lot.
So the result of this is that 457F, which is probably as much as possible to make it to Tom's benefit. And we'll get to it, see if there's more.
I don't know what this would sound like to everybody else, but as I'm looking at this, the places that we have the most room to play with is salary and additional comp, is what I'm hearing, correct?
Yeah, I will look at the 457F, especially if we could tie it to the June 30th, 2027 date.
Right. But I was going to suggest take the 350 to 360. And take the 50 to 60.
I was thinking the 350 to 365.
Okay.
Close. I mean, I think 4% would be, you know, at
it just doesn't seem right giving them less than that. I mean, yeah. I just want to go higher, but I am nervous that he's always since
the. No, I'm good there, and then the 50 to 60.
And I'm even comfortable going a little bit higher on the 50. I don't know, or the 60.
Really?
Okay. I see two people at 79, which gives me comfort that if I ever had to go defend it, I can say, well, put his results up against any president and I'll defend it. Uh-huh. So, I mean, I would even go to 75 if you guys are comfortable on that.
I'm comfortable with it. Again, given his tenures, his experience, his performance, all of those.
Yeah.
Okay. So subject to just, I'll check on the 457F. And then we can talk, obviously, again at the next more board meeting. But the initial plan is we would bring his base salary up roughly 4% or so.
Yeah.
We would change that 50 to 75.
And can I add that?
Extend his contract.
And the 401A, the new IRS limit, is 70 instead of 66?
And that's actually tied to the statute, if I remember.
Okay. I would think.
Yeah.
It's worth out. I just think he would maximize his age. Is to his benefit.
Yeah, that's good.
But I totally agree.
I'd move a lot more into 457 if you can, but that's the technical.
That's why I brought it up, and it's like if you think about what we've talked about, which is another issue I put in the review, if there are any things that we need to focus on, it's successorship planning. We love Tom, want him to stay forever, but if this isn't truly his last stop, we're gonna be in a president search. And, you know, then it's sort of, you take all of this off the table, but how do we dovetail with what our planning is to get him in the right place at retirement? So it's 5 years till, you know, he's eligible to start drawing from his 401 or his.
Well, he's 59.
No, he's 60 this year.
He'll be 60, yeah, this year. So he's eligible.
27, he'll be 62.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying, you know, our mindset needs to be on how do we put him in the best spot if that's in fact, do we want to keep him here through his retirement and so that he is in a great spot and that we, you know, we're not going to be hamstrung either in whoever the next.
Yeah, he did, just so you know, again, when we cleaned up the language, he pulled out, it was a huge number, I forget the number, that had been previously being accruing as deferred comp.
Oh, the former
plan he was under, which was, as I said, was brutal. I mean, he was paying taxes on it the year he quote unquote earned it, but didn't earn it or get it. That's part of his retirement plan. He's taken that out when we cleaned it up, no longer at risk, and he's put that, you know.
Is this for 2 years or 1 year?
Well, the contract would be 2 years. We would get another bite at the apple on salary
in 1 year.
At June next year.
Okay.
So the salary would hit, the contract would be for 2 years. The pay rates would be for 1 year.
Oh, okay. That's what I was trying to figure out.
Okay. And if you're reading over this or if something else catches your eye, to avoid any issue of sunshine law, I would ask you to email Rodney. Yeah. Tell Rodney what the question is or the feedback is, and then he can tell me, and we will make sure we stay clear of that.
But I think, Rodney, what you proposed.
Oh, I can.
You'll set it. You have one set it to us.
Yes.
I think what you proposed, the numbers, that's what we should go with.
Yeah.
Yeah. And again, I am. If we can put it in the 457, I totally agree with Kelly. Yep. Now, the only thing, and I will talk to Tom, if we put it in that, it will be at risk until the very end of the contract.
Because it has to be.
Because it has to be. If we just add it to the additional comp, he'll get it paid out in one lump sum here shortly.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
And so I might give him his choice.
Yeah.
And say, we're going to add 25.
That's what I was going to say. For him, it's probably a preference. And he's close enough to retirement age that.
Yeah, because he's
good.
I don't know how long they can, once he retires, he can keep it in a 457. Some plans allow you to keep it in there for 10 years or something. So he might just want to study what that looks like.
He might want to park it there. Okay, all good. Thank you.